to the MMA Roadshow, episode number 220. My name is John Morgan. Cold Coffee is working hard back home in Las Vegas at Casa de Cold Coffee, but I've got the lovely Mike Bond with me here. He's grinding. We're in New York. We're in Bellator 220, McDonald versus Gracie, but even better than Mike Bond, we've got Larkin Dash with us right here. How are you doing, young lady?
Hi, I'm great. Thank you for having me on this.
I should say where we are right now. I mean, it's no surprise that we would be at a Hooters, to be honest with you, because that's kind of the place that we hang out. We drink some cold beer. We eat some chicken wings. We talk some MMA. But we came here specifically for you because you are doing a meet and greet. You're doing an appearance. You're wearing a beautiful black dress right now. A few hours after weigh-ins, a few hours before you're going to step into the Bellator cage. Give me an idea what you're feeling like right now.
I'm ready. I mean, I didn't have a bad weight cut, so that was super nice. And then I just relaxed, took a nap, then got ready for this. And, you know, you can usually find me dressed, like, fairly nice. You know, I like to dress well, too. But I'm feeling good. I'm confident and ready, so.
That's awesome. What is this attention been like? I mean, you were very, very early in your professional career, right? And a lot of fighters, they toil away on the lower tiers for a long time. You know, they're grinding their way to the top. And here you are. I mean, you're getting attention. Now, this is a card full of superstars. This is probably, I think, the best card the Bellator's ever put together, top to bottom. So, you know, it's not like they're asking you to headline the damn thing. But I mean, we put out a story on you. I'm seeing other outlets putting out stories. It's getting clicks. It's getting you recognition. What does it feel like this early in your career to be kind of getting these eyeballs?
Yeah, so, I mean, I was waiting for, like, some kind of opportunity just because I've been doing MMA for 5 years now. I had a long amateur career. I was waiting kind of on management to get to go pro. So once I went pro, I didn't expect to be on Bellator like my second fight, but I took a really hard first opponent. So that got me ready for anything, you know. So I was waiting for something like this. I never thought it would be Bellator in Madison Square Garden this early, though.
That is crazy.
Yeah.
So how did the fight come together? I mean, did your management seek this opportunity out? Did Bellator come to your manager? How did this come together?
So Bellator had reached out to another coach in Michigan, and his fighter that they were looking for had just been injured. She just tore her ACL. So obviously they're not going to take it with that kind of risk going on and potentially worse injuries. So he reached out to my manager and was seeing, you know, like, will Larkin do it? And of course I'm going to do it. You know, I don't care if I'm 10 days out. I'm in shape and ready. So it's just like fine-tuning a few skills and getting ready to go.
So no question about it. There was not even a discussion.
Nope.
I always wonder what the attitude is. I mean, there's no question. Of course, you know, I don't want to say they've invested in Valerie, but that was a big signing for them, right? So, I mean, and so this is a Scott Coker special. They do this. He used to do this with Strikeforce. He does this with Bellator. You know, he'll take these people, identify them, and he'll bring them along, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's no reason you can't ruin all that, I
know.
Right. But I wonder, like, what's the attitude when you know, like, this is one of their new people, and they call you, are they looking at you, what, I'm the easy target? I'm the sucker? does any of that cross your head? Like, why me? Why did they call me?
You know, it's funny because she has a lot of hype, but that's literally all it is. I mean, I've seen her fights, and, I mean, she hasn't played with the big girls yet, you know? Like, she hasn't gone through war. She hasn't sought out people who are knowingly better than her to see what it's like to literally take the hardest punches you could ever take, the hardest jiu-jitsu, the best jiu-jitsu. And she hasn't seen that, and that's a flaw in her training. I'm not sure why that they would do that to not have her fight people that could and will beat her. I mean, my first fight, you know, was all three five-minute rounds, which
right.
is way different than amateur. She's never seen 15 minutes in the cage straight.
Right.
She doesn't know what that feels like. So I'm really excited to, you know, if it worst comes to worst, to show her what that means.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I'm glad that she was fine with fighting me, but I have a lot more experience in the ring. So, I mean, she may be decorated or whatever, but that doesn't mean anything to me. You know, I fought decorated people as an amateur, too, and that just doesn't mean anything.
Not buying into the hype.
No, not at all.
I dig it. Tell you about I want to ask you, it was just a couple hours ago, the energy of the face-off, because, Mike, I was in the back. I was shooting video and photos. Mike, you were right there, and you noticed something.
Yeah, I was curious, you know, her shaking when she got up in your face. What did you see from that? Did you see intensity? Did you see nerves? What was kind of the
I don't know.
Takeaway?
I've never faced off against someone and had them being shaking like that. I'm not sure if it was a rough weight cut. Her first professional fight was a rough weight cut, I hear.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if she had another rough weight cut or if it was more of her nervous or her thinking she looked intense, but it made her look nervous. And then her not smiling made her look like she's not ready to fight. She's not relaxed, calm, and like ready to get in there and do what she does best.
That's what I wondered. It felt a little like nerves, right?
That's how I felt. I mean, I was like, wow, like, I mean, I'm not shaking, you know?
Yeah. I mean, do you bring any, like, it seems like that it gives you a little bit of extra confidence or something, like a mental edge. Do you take that into the cage or does none of that matter tomorrow night?
Yeah, I mean, since I got to New York, I've gotten progressively less nervous. You know, like, I've seen, like, what she's doing, her cutting weight and stuff like that, and it's made me more confident. So.
Was she like giving you the evil eye there, or kind of trying to intimidate
you
a little bit?
I don't know. I mean, I've been trying to keep my distance from her, but I was gonna go down and do a little workout, and then she was in the gym cutting weight. So.
So you crossed paths.
It is what it is. So.
I dig it. I want to ask you the decision to sign the contract in the Hooters uniform, right? That's what got all the attention. That's what everybody talked to. I think we even talked about it a little bit internally, like. Is this disrespectful? You know, our headline, I think, was like, Hooters girl and MMA fighter signs Bellator. And in some ways, I think that you got to almost have, like, a character. I know, like, when people go on The Ultimate Fighter, you're just meeting them. You kind of label them as something. You know what I mean? That's just kind of the entry. You know, hell, Lena Leigh McFarlane started out by beating the soccer mom, right? And now look at her. You know,
sure.
She's on top of the world. So I wonder, like, you got all this attention. Were you expecting, like, what was the conscious decision was there a conscious decision to be like, well, hell, let's roll with this Hooters girl thing.
So my manager, I guess, had this a little bit in his mind that, like, this would be a good idea. We get some hype. But I didn't, you know. Like, I just had to sign the contract. So it wasn't a conscious decision on my part. But, I mean, I'm glad it happened just because, I mean, like, the whole Hooters thing does kind of, like, me as a person, you know, like, I'm from a small town. You know, I'm, like, following my dream. I stopped going to college, one semester left in my four-year degree just to, like, follow this MMA thing. So, I mean, the Hooters girl is, like, all American, you know. Like, that's how I am, you know. Like, I'm not trying to be, like, the most fashion-y person ever. Right. I'm not trying to carry, like, I'm not trying to be a model, you know.
Right.
Like, that's not my person. You know, I'm a fighter. I'm down to earth. And that's kind of what I wanted to portray in myself anyways. I'm not trying to portray that I'm better than anyone, so.
Was that a shot at her in the way she carries herself?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it was. I mean, it's all about how you present yourself, I think. So, I mean, you present yourself the way you want to be seen by the world, and I wouldn't want to be seen that way.
It's interesting, I mean, because in the reason, I mean, it's, I hate, I, you know, I hate to think that, like, this will be all you're ever known, the Hooters girl. But it, as an entry, though, it's great, right? I mean,
right.
Because you're fighting on the prelims, it's your second fight. And people are talking about, and they know you. They're knowing your name. So it's interesting.
People would kill to have that recognition that early in their career. Like, really, there's a lot of fighters. You know, look at half the other fighters on this prelim card that people don't know or haven't had Bellator fights. No one knows anything about them. And there's an identifier, but as your career goes along, you wash that away. And obviously, you know, the long-term goal, I'm sure, is to not be working any side jobs at all and be doing
right.
this full-time, right?
Right. Well, it's funny, though, because everyone, I think Valerie had said that she's like, oh, yeah, I used to waitress, and then I got out of it when money.
Right.
I would still waitress. Like, I truly enjoy it. It gets me away from the intensity of training, like 8 a.m. to 4 p.m.,
yeah,
and then
true.
All you're doing is in kill mode and just, like, intense.
Yep.
So it's so nice to go to work and just be carefree, and it gives you a reason to put makeup on and look pretty and talk to people and slow your life down.
Shane Carwin said the same thing, minus the makeup and stuff. Shane Carwin, I remember, he used to be an engineer, and he's like, I don't care if I'm heavyweight champ of the world. I'm never going to give that job up. Like,
right.
I like going and having a normal part of my day that's not just MMA all day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What degree were you pursuing that you quit one semester?
Business. Early?
Yeah.
Yep.
Wow.
So me and my boyfriend actually started a business. So
cool.
I mean, it did kind of help that I was in business school, but you know, like, I really wanted this dream to go somewhere. So I was like, well, you know, I ended on good terms, so I could always go back and finish that last semester, and I will go back and finish it. But I'm waiting for the right time and like a little bit more normality in my life. So.
Everybody had to say you were crazy, right? I mean,
yeah.
What really got you into fighting, though? Like, what was the, you know, passion that kind of grabbed you into? Did you train, like, anything younger, like a specific martial art? And you just went full bore into MMA?
So I was a farm girl.
Okay.
So I was always
Where are you
doing
from originally?
Something. Hillsdale, Michigan.
Okay.
So super small town. And then I was super athletic in high school. Then I went to a D1 school. So obviously I wasn't going to play, like, D1 sports. Mm-hmm. I wasn't that good at anything. So.
Right.
I mean, I just found MMA and I was like, sure, like, I'll do it. I'll try it. And that's my attitude. So then I just kept doing it, took some time off to finish college. And then I got this opportunity, so I'm like, I'm going to go for it.
That's awesome.
What's your favorite part of, you know, training MMA? Are you, you know, do you prefer the ground? Do you like to strike?
I mean, I've been working a lot on striking. I love the striking a lot, but I love the cardio part. Like, I was a cross-country runner, and I just really, like, enjoy seeing myself be able to, like, have more cardio than my opponent.
Right.
No matter where I go, no matter who I face, like, I will always out-cardio someone, and I really like that feeling.
That can be a big help. And when you see people break, right, and you know that they're feeling it,
yep,
that can be pretty incredible. Did you watch Valerie's first fight? Are you somebody that breaks down tape? She's obviously got a very unique style.
Yeah, so my coaches watch it in depth. I just saw a little clip of her pro fight. I trained specifically this, like, when I was getting ready for this for her style.
Okay.
So – you know, I know what to expect. I actually fought a girl that was also on the same kind of path, like very decorated, was extremely good with kicks. As an amateur fighter, I took my first loss as an amateur to her.
Right.
So whatever, but it was in Joe Louis Arena in Detroit, and it was a cool opportunity.
Wow.
So I'm hoping that this time, you know, I've developed so much more as a fighter that it won't be an issue.
So in some ways, you feel like that maybe prepared you for this one.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, she was on the same level as Valerie.
Yeah.
So
awesome. Well, provided everything goes your way, which I feel confident in you, I think it'll get done. What's the goal here? As you said, you've got this attention that people would kill for, you know, this early in their career. Is the goal are you one of these people that wants to fight six times a year or whatever? Or do you want to take your time and guide your way through? I mean, you're still early, you're developing. So give me an idea. What's the plan moving forward?
Yeah, so, I mean, I go one fight at a time, and I'll kind of, like, gather myself for a week after this fight and write down, here's what I want to change. Here's what I want to do differently. Here's what we need to work on. And then I'll go into the next camp. But, I mean, I think it's – whatever my team thinks is best for me, whatever my management, my coaches want to see, I know they have my best interest in mind. So, I mean, eventually, obviously, I do want to start a family. So whether that is, like, a break from fighting or if that's the end of my career, we'll see. But I'm definitely going to keep going with it. So this was just a big step for me.
Phenomenal. Well, this is awesome. I think it's so cool that here you are. This early in your career, you got an appearance here at Hooters and Madison Square Garden. You're going to be fighting. It's going to be crazy. The New York crowd is nuts, man. We've been here a couple times. They are awesome. They put, I mean, they're rowdy. They're yelling. It sounds like ticket sales are really good. So I got to imagine, are you going to sleep well tonight, or is it going to be tough?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not nervous at all. You know, like, I love being the underdog because you're literally going in there and you're being like, this is what I got. I mean, are you going to match it? So I'm going to sleep great. You know, I just took a nap, so I'm ready for another nap. So
I dig. All right, well, listen, we pulled you away for long enough. I appreciate the time you spent. Listen,
yeah, thanks so much, guys.
You got it. We are here for Bellator 222, McDonald versus Gracie. Let's do this. While we get reset, the young Mike Bond had a chance to speak with his fellow Canadian, Rory McDonald, earlier this week, and we'll play that intro for you now and see if you can start getting a little feel into the mind of Rory McDonald. What's going on? Here's Mike and Rory.
Right, well, this is a huge week for Canadian sports. You got yourself defending your title. You got the Raptors in the NBA Finals. Have you been following along with the Raptors? Do you feel any extra pressure to kind of make this a great week for your home country?
Not really. I was actually just talking with Danny. I haven't even been watching. I've seen, obviously, like, everyone talking about it on social media. So I wish them the best of luck.
You've been to some Raptors games. You infamously went to that one with Conor McGregor a few years ago, right?
I don't know if I went with Connor.
I've been
to one.
You guys were doing the world tour.
Okay. I don't know if he was there, though.
Okay.
But I remember I was with one. It was a promotional thing. It was cool. Basketball was one of, like, the coolest live sporting events I've actually been to. So I'd definitely go again.
Awesome. Well, hopefully, you know, maybe there's a championship parade. We can get you there with your belt and everything.
You know,
good times.
Never know.
Okay, perfect. Well, this is a quick turnaround for you, Rory. Obviously, you know, the talk of your statements after last fight, well documented and everything. Just, you know, what's this camp been like after, you know, you got past kind of that post-fight media flurry and just were able to focus on yourself and kind of close yourself in?
Yeah, really, the beginning was just getting my injury squared away, taking some time to rest, and my headspace, just getting everything in line, clearing everything up. And then it was just putting in the work. and you know, being in good shape for a fight, taking a break and then training hard again, I feel in great shape. So I really feel like I'll be able to put on a great performance.
Yeah, what ultimately factored into your decision to do this fight? I know Faraz said pretty much immediately afterward, like, he, you know, if it was his call, he would encourage you to do it. I'm sure it wasn't 100% his call, it was yours as well and maybe some other people, but what were the determining factors?
Well, I personally wouldn't have minded if the fight, you know, was like later on, maybe in like July or something.
Sure.
Just to, because at the time, my elbow and my cut and things, thinking in my head, well, will I be able to train properly for this, or am I going to be sitting on my butt and have to fight, you know, and with no sparring and no hard training? So that was making me think it should have been maybe fought a little later, because I didn't know how my injuries were going to heal in time, but they did heal fast, thank God, and I was able to train hard. But they basically were like, you got to fight or you're not in the tournament. So I wasn't really willing to do that. So
would you have had to give up your belt?
Yeah, I think I would have got the boot. So gonna go in there and you know, show that when they put pressure on me, I'll come back harder and show that I'm a champion.
Yeah, you're the only guy I can remember, you know, basically in MMA history to have two consecutive fights where your next fight was lined up afterwards. You know, it happened after the Musasi fight, it happened after the last one. It seemed like going into the Musasi fight, you kind of liked it. You're like, I like knowing what's next, all that stuff. But now it's like, I could have wished for a little more time.
I don't even know what's after this one, too, because I know it's funny now. Yeah, so it's cool. I mean, it's nice, I guess, you know, to have a bit of a guide, so to speak, where it's like, normally you're just waiting around till you get the next name.
Yeah, and it saves people like myself asking you every interview what's next.
Yes, right. So we know.
Perfect. Do you know, like, if there's any timeline for that final, when they want it or anything like that, or is it all going to be dependent? Are you going to be like, hey, give me a bit of time after this one?
Well, I need time. Yeah. I'm having a son in the beginning of August. So me and my wife want to have some time for that to, you know, just reorganize this new addition to our family. So we'll need some time with that, and then once we get our ground, we'll be able to train for a fight. So maybe the end of the year-ish, maybe, I don't know, somewhere like that.
Yeah, that'd be a well-deserved break for sure. And just with this fight with Neiman, I mean, you are used to fighting, you know, very recognizable names, veterans, people who've been around. This guy has not been around all that long, even though he's 7-0 in Bellator. What do you just make of him as an opponent? What's kind of your scouting report on him at this point?
Well, he's very good. He's fighting for the world title, so, you know, I can't overlook him because he's only got 9 fights. Because I was once that guy too, where I was on my way up, and maybe those veterans who are used to fighting other veterans, thinking I'm just gonna squash this young guy, but I don't look at it that way. I'm fighting for the world title, and I plan on putting my A game in there, no matter who I'm up against. So.
Yeah, and you mentioned, you know, earlier in your career, obviously, you know, that just instantly makes me think back to the fight with Carlos Condit, and like, you were obviously doing super well. You're on a roll there, but, you know, the veteran maybe has some tactics, some things that he's able to utilize. Is there a point in this fight, or things you can do in this fight to maybe show him this is a different level? You know, everyone talks about there's levels to the sport.
Absolutely. I mean, when you have experience, it's key. That was one thing I was missing when I first got into the high level of UFC competition. But now that I have it, it's one of my strengths now that I could use against maybe someone like Neiman, who doesn't have that yet.
And you've obviously fought some really good grapplers, Damian Maia, John Fitch in your last fight, and you've survived, you know, dangerous positions on the ground with them. But obviously Neiman, you know, comes from the Gracie background. Is it more important than maybe in those fights to avoid those situations in terms of like not even getting them in them, period, as opposed to fighting your way out of them?
I'll definitely be fighting similar. I don't want to get the fights to a place where his strengths could take advantage. So I'm always going to be trying to implement my game and shut down all his attacks, you know, to try to work towards his game plan. So, I feel like I have the skills to do that, too, and the experience and the IQ to be able to, you know, coordinate the fight and manage the fight.
And you win this tournament. There's, on top of having the belt, another tournament belt that you get. There's that $1 million prize. You mentioned having another child in August. Like, how much does that do for you and, you know, potentially changing your life?
Yeah, it's a huge deal for us. I mean, you know, this is my career. This is how I support my family, and this is how we make our money. So what a blessing it would be. So, you know, God willing, I'm praying for that to all go through.
All right, welcome back to MMA Roadshow. That was Mike Bond with his fellow countryman there, Rory McDonald, the champ, the Bellator welterweight champ. I was actually the camera guy for that. Cold coffee back home. I'm serving a different role this week. We're doing things a little bit different. So, Mike, let's get your thoughts on it, man. I mean, I think we kind of mentioned it there. What a fun way to start out, though. That's great,
yeah,
man.
That was great.
She was great. Largan Dash is phenomenal, and she great energy. But, you know, Rory McDonald, as we look at this main event, I think everybody's got the same questions, right? I mean, when this fight was announced, I mean, I guess it wasn't really announced. We kind of already knew when it was going to be scheduled and all that. But I think everybody had the same concerns, right? Like, I mean, this guy, we just saw him say, I don't know if I can do this anymore. And I don't want to judge him for that. Like, I hope I'm not – like, I don't ever want to – the honesty is amazing, and I get it, man. I mean, we talk to these fighters all the time. This is a mentally taxing game, man, more than a physically taxing game. Mm-hmm. But I think everybody was worried. You know, is he physically okay and recovered from that fight? Is he mentally in the right place? And you know, I guess with Neiman Gracie, the good news is you're not talking about somebody that's probably going to come in dropping bombs, trying to knock you out. You know, but it can get frustrating, you know, grappling and defending takedowns and trying to battle off choke attempts and all that. But, I mean, based on Rory's body language this week, based on your talking with him, give me an idea where you think his head's at, and are you concerned this could be a bad night for him?
I don't know. I mean, like, Neiman Gracie is definitely capable of winning, even against, you know, I think the best version of Rory McDonald. He's a good fighter. We don't know how good, but yep. If what we've seen from Neiman Gracie so far is any indication of, like, you know, where he can go, I think, you know, he's got a real chance against any version of Rory.
Yep.
It's interesting, like, what you said there about he's not, you know, a guy who maybe, like, he'll choke you out. He might armbar you and break your arm, but, you know, he's not, like, necessarily a knockout threat. I think maybe that's what Rory thrives off, though, more so. Like, I think that could be part of the problem. Like, you're going into a fight against John Fitch. Like, what's the worst that's going to happen? He's probably going to grind you out for 5 rounds
right. And,
like, maybe, you know, beat you up a little bit. Yep. But you're not going to, you know, it's not a Robbie Lawler type of, like, oh, crap. Like, I could be left face first on the canvas. Like, this could be real, real bad. So I think maybe that plays into it, but the overall question, I am way more satisfied from what I've seen from him this week than the last fight week that he had. Even going in, like, you know, he had that weird interview with Steven Morocco in San Jose where, like, the whole thing was just about his faith. And, you know, that was the line of questioning that Steven chose to pursue.
Right.
There's no secrets that that's become a big part of Rory's life. If you look at, like, his Instagram and his Twitter, it's all, like, you know, Bible verses and stuff like that. But just, like, the vibe I'm getting from him, he seemed a lot better, in a better place, better energy going into this one. I think, I don't know, time will tell. Obviously, we'll find out, like, in the result, if this was, like, you know, a warning sign or an indicator, or if it was just, like, a moment of, you know, I don't know, whatever, he was going through something and he just thought it and felt a certain way. But I don't know. I think it's really hard to say, like, until we see the fight, but I am definitely, I could say, like, with confidence that I like what I see out of him more so during this week than the last one.
I agree. I feel like there's a better energy. Just being around him, you know, listening to your guys' conversation, it feels like there's a much better energy. It feels like he's a better place. And, you know, you talked a lot about the religious faith and everything. Obviously, you have a very pregnant girlfriend as well, or fiance or whatever they are.
Wife.
But wife, okay. Yep. So that, I mean, I imagine that's a time for reflection, you know. I mean, everybody talks about dad cowboy and all that, but I mean, listen, I can tell you as a father, your life starts changing, your priorities start changing, and she is very visibly about to pop here pretty soon.
Yeah, and so, hey man, at the end of the day, like, what happens after this tournament, we'll see, but if $1 million prize doesn't get you off your ass to, like, you know, we know he's a good fighter, but, like, if you can't get motivated for that,
right,
then, like, okay, maybe you should think about not doing this
that
anymore.
Helps set,
like,
up
he has all, he has a championship belt on the line, he has a potential $1 million, like, one fight away. It's, you know, basically the dream scenario for any fighter. So, like, if that doesn't get his juices flowing, if he's still not up for that, then, yeah, maybe this isn't for him anymore.
I'll tell you what, though, it is interesting because I'll be honest. I hadn't even thought about what you said before because, to me, I was like, well, this is a safe spot. That's good. You know, it's not like anybody's going to come, you know, looking to touch the chin. I mean, you're going to have to, you know, as you said, it's not like fighting John Fish, but – I hadn't thought about that. He kind of thrives in those moments too, and maybe that's what gets him going. So,
well, dude, think about it. After that second Robbie Lawler fight, where you know there's the horrific image of him like trying to get off the ground and like you know collapse back down. He said in an interview, like his first interview after, that was the best night of his life, and that was the greatest moment. Like he enjoyed that more than anything. And like I think that guy is gone. Like right. It does not seem like that Roy McDonald exists anymore. He doesn't talk. You know the serial killer Roy McDonald. Right. Like when have you heard anyone talk about that recently?
Nobody.
There's no vibes from that anymore. So it's interesting in that scenario. He's definitely evolved and changed, and he's been doing this for so long. And
he started so young.
But it does really seem like the religion thing has been the overall biggest effector on him.
What did you end up doing on your picks? Did you end up going with Rory? And let's qualify it. Was it just a Canadian homer pick, or did you?
No, I still think Rory. I mean, again, I said off the top, Neiman is good. Yeah. He can win this fight, but like it's one of those things that until I see it, I just can't pull the trigger on it. And like maybe after the fight, we'll be like, shit.
What was
I thinking? Gracie submitted him in the first round. This guy's really damn good. He's a top 5-7 welterweight in the entire world. But right now, just based off what I know about these two guys, like Rory McDonald, we've seen him against a Damian Maia, against John Fitch. Like he's got good defensive grappling, never been submitted. He knows what he's doing in terms of like, defending himself on the ground and not letting him get in those bad scenarios.
I think I ended up going with Neiman, and admittedly, some of it was the questions around Rory. I think just what Neiman did to Ed Ruth, I don't think he's going to submit him, but, man, what Neiman did to Ed Ruth I thought was impressive, the way he beat him, you know, just mm-hmm. to be able to take down a storied wrestler like that. And I have a feeling we might be in for a bit of a grind fest. And that's what I wonder, you know, does his mind wander in there, you know, when he's like, ah, dude, here I am defending another takedown. Here I am walking my back to the cage again and trying to get back up and trying to battle the hands. Does he just go, ah, I don't even like this
anymore? Yeah, I mean, there definitely could be a breaking point that we see in that fight, and I'm sure that's what Neiman Gracie is going to be trying to do. But on the other side, we've never really seen Neiman in trouble, like seriously tested. You know, what happens if Rory, you know, plants that kick that he hit John Fitch in the face with on Neiman? Like, it could be lights out. So there's a lot of interesting elements that go into this fight, and I think that's what makes it a challenge. But there's a lot of pressure on Neiman going into this fight, too, man. Like, a Gracie can finally win in a major MMA championship after all these years.
It's crazy how long they've gone in between, right?
It's a lot of pressure. So we'll see how he handles that. He's never experienced anything like this. I mean, Ed Ruth is a very competent opponent and everything, but it's just a different world, you know, fighting someone like Rory McDonald.
You think there's more pressure on Neiman than there was on Crone or less? Like, I feel like because it's not a UFC fight, like even though it's like tournament title, all that, like I feel like. And I think with Crone, of course, it was because he was Hickson's son, too. And Hickson has, like, this aura and this legend about him, right? But I do feel like when Crone stepped in, there was just, like, unbelievable amount of pressure where it's like, dude, you got to represent.
And I think, you know, he's shown – Neiman has – their styles are a little different. Like, Crone has
– slightly different.
He's a guy –
They're different human beings.
Yeah, very different. But, you know, Crone goes in there. He beats, you know, Kawajiri in, what, like, his third fight or something. Like, was proven, or like, that he can beat good guys way earlier than Neiman did. You know, he got the Bellator treatment. He got built up. He's 7-0 in Bellator, 9-0 overall. So, you know, they did well, and if he wins this fight, you'll be like, hey, you know, Scott Coker did it again. He built up a guy from nothing and turned him into a legitimate top 10, top 5 welterweight. So we'll
see. Interesting, too. That's such an interesting path, too, because that's one. I think that's a huge – like, if you're a prospect and you're thinking about where do I want to go, like – and I know fighters have a different mindset, dude. Like, they're not like me and you. Like, they say, I want to fight the best person, and they really mean it. Me, I would be like – I want to fight the easiest person available that I can still get paid. You know,
exactly.
What is the path of least resistance?
Exactly.
And Bellator has that luxury. I mean, it's the Scott Coker model, right? Did it with Strikeforce, done it with Bellator.
Yep.
Gets criticized sometimes. You know, as people say, like, MVP should have been facing better people. AJ McKee should have faced better people by now. But I mean, it's good, I think, to get those reps, especially when they're getting these guys, and they have to. They've got to roll the dice on these people early in their careers, because if you wait till a guy is 10 or 12-0. He's going to the UFC.
Yeah, you just never know. And, I mean, this, I think, rolls perfectly into the conversation I had with Dylan Danis at Media Day as well. Like, I more or less talked about this, and I was thinking it in the back of my head, but he brought it up on his own. He's like, look at Aaron Pico. You know, like, that's – there's basically three sides to every fight booking, like I said. You know, there's the fighter, what they want, what the management wants, and what the promoter wants.
Right.
And you need to come together and find what gels best in that scenario. And, you know, I think Coker does it better than others, but I think you could criticize that maybe it goes on a little too long in some scenarios.
I guess that's the feel, right? It's just mastering that point of, yes, bringing them along, but finding a true test.
It's just a weird one, right? Because then you look at MVP and, you know, Douglas Lima – may very well be the best welterweight on earth. Like, you can make that argument. He's really damn good. You know, a lot of people get shut off by him, so, like, there's no shame in it. But, yeah, like, you could – was he MVP ready after all that time? Would he be less ready three fights ago if they did it? Would he be more ready? Like, you just don't know. But at some point, like, there's a proper scenario. Like, I think, you know, especially if you're starting someone 0-0 or something like that, like, you give them a handful of fights. But, like, at what point – at some point they need to make the jump, and at some point people get sick of seeing them being
a setup matchup or whatever that feels the way. Yeah, no question. All right, let's get to we will get to Dylan Danis in a moment, but let's do this. You had a good interview with Chael Sonnen as well. Chael Sonnen fighting Luedo Machida, a couple MMA legends there. Let's play that interview so everybody can hear that, and then we'll talk about some of the things that were said. And unlike the interview that I put out on video, I left in the very first part where he told you some funny stuff.
Oh, no.
And this is Chael and Mike.
All right, when you are, Mike.
I must tell you, I have a really bad breath. There's nothing I can say.
It's okay.
I can't hardly be around myself. I just don't want you to leave here and go, hey, man, that guy's good.
Okay.
I got it. Work with it.
It's all right. I forgive you. All right. Mike Bond here at Bellator 222 Media Day, saying next to Chael Sonnen, who co-headlines this card against Lyoto Machida, your 15th career fight against a former world champion of a major organization.
Headlines? What kind of an expression is that? What does that mean?
The co-main event.
Excuse me, the main event. Rory is the encore. I am the main event.
I like that one. I haven't heard that one from you before.
Yes, no, I'm being real with you. Rory McDonald is the encore. He should call himself the encore.
You were originally at the top of the bill.
Look at him, sitting in the middle. The king sits on the end. Huh? Look at this. This was my seat. I got up from it to do this interview because you asked me to, and you dressed so nicely for it, I thought I should do it your way.
True story. You were originally the encore, and then they put you in the main event. What happened there?
Yes. You just used my... it's pretty good, Mike, I must tell you. Okay, listen, here's what happened. They are fighting for the world championship. In fairness, the world championship goes last. That's just the fair way to do it.
Unless you're Jorge Chincalba, then you go first.
Are they opening the show? I've actually always wondered where they've been. I assumed it was me and Machida, then who you just said, versus Caldwell. What's his
name? Jorge Chincalba.
Nobody knows for sure, but that somebody is taking on Caldwell, and then the encore. And then I thought, no, those guys, fine. And then it's been a little bit of a mess. Eventually, they will call my name, and I'll make that walk.
Yeah, that's all that matters.
That's all that matters.
And as I tried to say, you know, 15th former world champion of a major organization, you're fighting. Just talk about fighting that level of high-level competition over and over and over and over. That's what you want. I know that, right?
Yeah, well, I must tell you, I'll fight any of them. No, I wouldn't mind an easy fight or a middle fight. Anybody that wanted to fight me, I will go fight. And I had guys in my career, Jeremy Horn comes to mind, but they gave me opportunities when they didn't have to. Gave me opportunities when I was begging for it, and they were up here and I was down here. And I appreciate those guys, and I will hand that back anytime. And if I can't defend myself and they can get over on me, then good for them. That's the business. But as far as taking on Machida, taking on champions, I mean, yeah, that's the way it seems to go. I've had a hard schedule, no way about it. If you look at my resume, it's been a tough one.
Yeah, absolutely. And where does Machida fit in, do you think, in terms of the most difficult opponents?
Yeah, so I'd have to tell you that after this fight, but looking at it going in from, like, say, an intimidation factor, he's right up there. Just because he's so weird. I don't have anybody in Portland that does what he does. We don't hold his stance. We don't do karate. I mean, I thought, in my mind, we settled this debate of wrestlers versus karate guys in 1993. That's what I thought happened, but somehow he stuck around, and that's a credit to him. That's not meant as an insult, but somehow he's found a way to make a sport that sucks effective, in truth.
How has his style evolved, do you think? Because it seemed like there was a point there, you know, end of his title reign, a few losses after, maybe he was getting figured out a little bit, then he dropped to middleweight, got some new success there. Like, what version is he now? Like, is he someone that you fully kind of know what to expect? Or is it still a lot of mystery there?
I think I know what to expect a lot more than some of the guys that had to fight him early on, just because there's more footage. I don't totally know how to deal with it. I mean, it is unique. I'll only get one crack at this thing. I worked really hard. I trained really hard. But as far as preparing with somebody that does what he does, that just simply didn't happen for me. And You know, I think he's done a very good job. People ask me where he's at in his career. I'll remind you, in his last fight, he beat the former world champion. So had he had that fight 6 months prior, he'd be the current world champion. So, I mean, I think he's right up there in skills.
Yeah, and the reason you keep wanting these big fights, too, is because it takes you in the trajectory of the title, right, which is your ultimate goal. Does this one puts you on the doorstep, right?
Yeah, this is said to be the number one contender's fight, but it puts me in a really weird spot. Like, generally, you would be chasing the champion. I mean, that is the general rule of the business. That's the general rule in life, in any business. Ryan Bader sucks. Ryan Bader can't draw. People don't know who Ryan Bader is. So Ryan Bader, as the champion, has to beg me to come in and fight. The roles are totally reversed. He's got to beg me to be the number one contender. I don't like Ryan Bader. I've got a history with Ryan Bader. I want to be champion. I don't know if I want to do Ryan Bader that favor. And I've given him the opportunity to win me over. I've never felt he called me out the right way. He never affected my ego. And I never felt he shined up my wheels enough to make me then come and do something for him. I think he's playing his cards wrong. I think he needs to be a little nicer to Old Chael, quite frankly, or he needs to be a little bit meaner to Old Chael. But he seems to be sitting in the middle of the road, which is why in his meager little career, a fight with me would be five times what anything he's ever done before. So until I like Ryan Bader a little bit more, which I really don't see happening, I'm not giving him the opportunity to fight me, even though he's champion. How do you like that?
Interesting. So I could maybe agree with the part, maybe he's not the biggest draw, doesn't have the biggest name, but two-division champion, why does he suck?
Yeah, well, skill-wise, I think he does a fine job. I think he's got a couple of tricks. I think as a competitor, he is coming further and further. I also acknowledge his heavyweight championship. I was in that tournament. I mean, one of the deals going into the tournament was whoever walks out of this, there's no politics here. It's a straight line bracket. So I will give him his due on that. But I mean, look, he's got to do his part. You know, if he wants to get on a docket with me, he has to do his part. And just being the champion and bringing that to the table, that's a lot. Because I want that championship. I mean, that's a lot. But he's not in the driver's seat. And he's going to have to do something to get my interest.
And you mentioned the championship. And I read that really great piece you did on ESPN.com. And you were reiterating the goal. You're going to keep going until you make, you know, accomplish that goal and make that promise to your father. Is that a lot of pressure to put on yourself? I mean, that seems like something, you know, a lot of weight that you're putting on yourself there to accomplish that goal.
Yeah, man, I don't really know how that came out. And at this point, I almost regret it. I wish I would have kept that a personal motivation for myself. But, yeah, it is a lot of pressure.
Yeah. And if you know, if it didn't work out for you, would that, you know, really hurt you at the end of the day? Or can you feel content with, you know, doing what you've done?
No. I'll either win the championship or I will be a failure. Yeah, I believe that wholeheartedly. I was told when I was 17 years old by Matt Lindland, we were both on wrestling quests at that time. But he told me that you cannot retire unless you win a world championship. You can only quit. And I don't want to be a quitter.
Interesting. And we've seen, you know, speaking of retirement, seeing a lot of notable fighters walk away recently. King Mo, Alexander Gustafsson, you know, list goes on and on. Why? Is this just a weird coincidence kind of thing? Timing lineup?
That hurt for me. That hurt for me to see King Mo walk away. I had no idea. I talked to Mo all the time. He never even alluded to that. Plus, I think he's fighting very well, quite frankly. I don't love his strategy at all times, but as far as his skills go, I watch King Mo, and I'm so impressed with him. I just think he's such a good fighter, good ambassador for the sport, great guy to be around. But privately, his body was hurting. You know, he was having some injuries. He was having to go into fights injured. He wasn't being able to train the way he wanted to. He retired. But yeah, that was sad for me.
And last thing, we were talking to
Gus too. Quite frankly, Gus too. You know, I didn't see the Gus one coming. I don't have the personal relationship with Gus that I do with Mo. But I'm a big fan, and I was watching. I thought he looked great. I thought Gus looked absolutely great. He got pinned down in one bad position. It was the same position that John Jones put him in. I thought, well, Gus, let's just work on that position. The rest of your ski look great. I disagree with him. I don't think it's time for him to retire.
Interesting. And last thing, we were talking to Machida earlier, and he said he's been surprised at the lack of talk from you leading up to this fight. I know you say you don't talk trash, you talk truth. So give us the truth about Lyoto Machida. And, you know, if it's kind, it's kind. If it's not, it's not.
Yeah, and that's the way it is. I've never sold fights. I've never talked trash. In my opinion, I mean, I have some real feelings. Some of them maybe just carried over to Ryan Bader a moment ago. But I don't make those things up. Ryan Bader knows what he knows what this is about. He's known about this for a number of years, and he knew eventually this was going to come out publicly. So as far as Machida goes, he seems like a really nice guy. I met his wife. She seems like a really nice person. I met his kids, two beautiful children. He just seems like a great dude.
How do you beat him?
I got to crowd him. I got to get my hands on him. I don't want to deal in that range. I don't want to deal with that karate stuff. I'm gonna taunt him early on, trying to get him to throw a kick. I think at some point he has to throw it. Even if I do an interview like this, and I think he has to do it. He's been doing it since he was 8 years old. I do not think he can control himself. And when he throws a kick like everybody before him, I will run his ass down, and he will never get up.
Perfect. Well, Chael, I really appreciate the time as always.
Some guys just say that. Some guys say that because it's a polite, but you mean it. I can tell you mean it. Thank you for that.
It's not quite as extravagant. We did the big Rolling Stone interview a few years ago. We did arm wrestle. We did last year on the Viacom balcony there out in Times Square. It's not quite as extravagant, but it's always good to talk to you.
But you dressed even nicer, huh?
It's true.
This is something.
I had to lift it up a little bit.
No, your mother's watching this, and she's very proud right now. Congratulations.
Yeah, all right. Thank you, Chael. Appreciate it.
Cool. Appreciate you.
All right, that was Mike Bond and a very bad-breathed Chael Sonnen, and he was able to share that with the young Mike Bond as they got started, which I
didn't smell anything. So,
I was wondering if he was actually just kind of – maybe he was just, you know, having a little fun.
Maybe. I don't know. It's always hard to tell with Chael. Like, how would you ever know?
So good. All right, but listen, but we'll talk about the matchup itself. But, man, Chael, of course, Chael is always going to give you some lines. I love the fact that he's the main event. You know, and the other one's the encore. Brilliant. I love that. You know, and he's always going to have a little fun. But, man, I the line that he said, I mean, it really did stick with me where he's like, you know, unless you're a champion, you can't retire. You just quit. And it's funny because you can tell, or at least the way I said, it wasn't just some cliche line to him. No. Like, I think he really honestly believes that. And, of course, this story's been told many times over, the, you know, the promise that he made to his father that he would do it. And so, I mean, I know that means something to him.
It was interesting. They said he regrets saying that in public.
Though. That's what I thought was incredible because, as you correctly pointed out, man, that puts a lot of pressure on you that you got to get this done. I don't know. I just – that moment of reflection there for Chael, I thought was pretty interesting.
Yeah. No, he's a fascinating guy, and it's a ton of pressure to put on yourself. I mean, I couldn't imagine. That's like – yeah, I don't even know how to compare that to. That's like, you know, going telling your kid or something. You're like, I promise I'm going to win this fight or something. Then you come home and you lose.
Yeah,
and
what happened?
Like, yeah, it's a lot to deal with. And it's like an unnecessary pressure in some ways. But again, you know, he's going to say what he's going to say. He has this relationship with his dad. But yeah, maybe that's something you internalize a little more. But, you know, credit to him for saying it because it puts a ton more pressure. And I don't think anyone is going to be like, you know, if Chael Sonnen never wins a major championship and he retires from MMA, no one's going to be, like, talking about the career and be like, you know, Chael Sonnen had these, you know, he was a great talker. He had the amazing rivalry with Anderson Silva, et cetera. The list goes on. But he broke that promise to his late father. Like, you know, no one's going to be saying that.
Of course.
They're going to be, like, they're going to talk about positives. But, yeah.
I mean, but he will always be, you know, the guy that was good but didn't win the big one, right?
Sure.
I mean, and I'm not taking a shot at him. I'm just saying that would be his reputation, right? But, I mean, to me.
It's kind of BS, too, because he did win the big one in WEC against Paul Phillip, but he never got the belt, which is crap.
That's true. That is
crap.
So
like,
true.
Like, he should have a notable title.
And he was promised that they were going to send it to him, right?
Yeah, but even if they did, like, in his mind, it's not legitimate. He didn't get that wrapped around his waist in the center of the cage by whomever. It's, like, obviously a different feel. He doesn't have the photos of him, you know, actually getting that moment of glory.
That's right.
So that I'm sure that makes it a little more tough.
But I'll tell you what. To me, Chael, whether he ever wins a title or not, I mean, he transcended that, I think. I mean, he has been so formative in the sport and such. I mean, think about how long he's been in the public eye and been at the center. I mean, he's still a draw. He's incredibly popular. Yeah. And, I mean, even now, I mean, he's working for ESPN and Bellator. And, I mean,
I tweeted this out, like, a few weeks ago.
How is that possible?
You turn on a Bellator UFC fight every week, there's a good chance you're going to get Chael Sonnen somewhere on the broadcast.
Right?
Like, he's the only
for
person.
For any organization.
It's crazy. It's absolutely – it's crazy. And, yeah.
And he's so well-spoken. He's so educated, man. He's such a good dude. And I think I'm glad that people are now seeing it because I remember when he was at the height of Chael shtick, you know, there were people that literally hated his guts. And it's like, man, I wish you knew how this guy was behind the scenes because he's a totally different human being.
Yeah, I mean, the story with him has just been so crazy. Like, I remember when we were at whatever UFC event in Vancouver a few years ago and, like, the news broke that, you know, he retired on, you know, UFC Tonight or whatever. And,
right.
Like, we wrote the story in the newspaper and, like, this big thing about him talking about his family and, like, doing all this, and this. And then we basically find out, like, a few days later that the whole thing was BS and that, like, you know, he basically played everyone for a fool.
Right.
And I still have that newspaper article, like, at home in my
really?
Folder. Yeah, like, I try to keep all the ones I do in print, but, like, I just flip through sometimes and I see that. I was like, wow, like, you know, that was a dark time for him, but like look where he's come back. Like that guy's ability to go through stuff and rebound and build himself up.
Teflon Don, right? Just nothing
and
sticks.
Like, yeah, I'm sure we'll get into the actual fight itself, yeah. But we're talking about the title stuff. Like I would like to see him get that opportunity, and I'm getting more and more captivated by this potential Ryan Bader fight because it seems like he knows something about Bader from the, like their past experience
right.
that we don't. But I think Bader's kind of at his peak right now and chill, you know, he's 42, so you never know. But I would like to see that fight, not saying I hope he wins or anything. Or
I mean, he's definitely laying the groundwork for it, right? And it does make sense. I mean, I think Coker came out and said that Bader is going to fight Congo next at heavyweight,
yeah.
But then maybe go to light heavyweight.
I mean, it's just so tough for Chael, though, because it's like, look at the guys he's had to run into for the title, like Anderson Silva twice, John Jones, and now like Ryan Bader, who, say what you will, you know, maybe earlier in his career, not the flashy guy, but he's a pound-for-pound fighter right now. He's got two belts.
Strong,
he's done
powerful
incredible,
dude.
Yeah, he's done incredible stuff, so like, he's just running into matchups that are, you know, really, really tough for him, so
yeah.
We'll see if he can ever accomplish that goal.
All right, let's talk about this matchup that he's got right now. Lyoto Machida, obviously a veteran of the game as well. He's getting up there in age also. I wonder, I know he doesn't ever do, like, crazy open workouts, but were you kind of surprised at, like, how non-movement there was? I don't know, it just – The open workout that we had outdoors
that
here.
That whole open workout was kind of just meh with everyone.
Yeah,
involved,
and he normally does cool, like.
Yeah,
you know,
the one
he
in Hawaii was dope.
It was.
It
and
was
here
cool.
He did,
and maybe because it was like on a beach and stuff and it made it a
that
little
was really cool, yeah, versus just the corner of a New York street. Granted, we're outside of Madison Square Garden, but yeah, it was
yeah,
like
smelling
a hot
garbage
dog stand in garbage.
Stuff.
Sorry, New York. It's just the truth.
It's true. Your city smells like garbage. I lived here for 6 months. Like, I loved it at the time, but every time I come back, it's like, this place smells like garbage.
Sorry. All right, but carrying on.
Sure.
No, but I don't know. I don't know if I'm reading too much into it. I just his open workout was very just blah. There wasn't much to it, and I didn't see much out of it, so it kind of worries me. I mean, he's been a good spirit. You know, I've talked to him a couple times.
Think it may be an injury or something?
I don't know. Yeah, like it just – yeah, that's it scares me a little bit. I don't know. I don't know. I just didn't know if you observed it and thought the same thing at the workout.
I mean, I was kind of working and stuff, so, like, I was, you know, doing some stuff on the side. So I didn't get a real, real good look. I kind of just saw them doing their thing, and I was like, okay, this kind of just looks like a
yeah.
normal Machida thing, but I didn't see the earlier part. But, yeah, I mean, it's a possibility, and if he is hurt, it'll probably make it a more competitive fight. But, like, you know, no disrespect
did
to
you
Chael,
take
but
did
this
you
is
take
literally,
Leo?
Like, Lyoto Machida, this is the style of matchup that he's ate this kind of dude alive his entire career.
Yep.
Like, this is tailor-made Machida-type fight that he's destroyed these guys over and over and over and over throughout his career.
I mean,
so
it plays
like,
into it, right? Because, like, he's going to be a counter-striker. He needs you to come at him, right? And what does Chael have to do to win? I mean, Chael can't stay on the outside and try to kickbox with
him. Interestingly enough, though, in that Chael interview we just played, Chael has said, go back through, like, almost any pre-fight interview, you know, what's going to happen in this fight? He says every time. Game plan's always the same. The bell's going to ring. I'm going to go across the cage, try to put him on his back and beat a hole in him, not let him up to, like, blah, blah, blah.
Yep.
But he said this time, he's like, oh, I'm going to go out there. I'm going to dance with him a little bit. At some point, he's going to throw a kick, and I'm going to catch that and put him on his back, and he's not getting back up.
Yep.
It's a little bit of a different take. I don't
know
if that's just because, you know, he was trying to be a little more open with me or whatever, but, like, he went off script, his usual script on that one,
yeah,
what he says. So that's interesting. Maybe he has a slightly different approach, and I think you need to. Like, Machida – can't just, I mean, I guess you could just go out there and try
bull
to do that, but
that's
probably a bad idea. Like, he'll probably clip you. How many times have we seen guys walk right into Machida's punches? No, Ryan Bader.
Over and over. Did you take Machida in the picks?
I actually picked Chael,
did
I believe.
You?
Yeah. I don't know if that was, like, more of a homer pick, but we'll see. I think I did. I honestly can't remember at this point. I'm pretty sure I picked Chael.
I picked Lyoto, but I'm – it's funny. So I think you picked Chael and you're waffling. I picked Lyoto and I'm waffling now.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, the staff picks, I'm just middleman. I won the first year ever, I think, in 2014. And I've just been hovering in the center, like, ever since. I don't know what it is. So.
That's funny. You got hot at one point. I've never won, damn it. I'm always in, like, third or fourth, right around there, up towards the top. Mine is always want to pick the prelims. I feel like I'm so much better at picking the prelims because, like, now, Bellator cards would normally be hard. This one's a little bit easier.
It's
but
tough.
But, yeah, but UFC prelims, I feel like it, like – after you've interviewed people a whole bunch, you know, they're well into their careers, I feel like I have a harder time, like, dissociating emotions from my picks. So it's like on the prelims where it's like guys that I've never met or I've only met once or something, it's like I can very clearly evaluate what their style is, what their skill is, and how it's going to play out. Yep. But as like I said, you interview 10, 15, 20 times or whatever, like I don't know. I start to develop feelings for the people.
It is. And, yeah, you're not supposed to do that, quote, unquote, but, like, it's human emotion. Like, tell me, you know, you get to know someone, bonds form, and, you know, even if it's completely, like, impartial, you just see these people and you just start to feel a certain way. But I don't know who first said this quote, but I feel like covering the sport, the more you learn about it, the less you know in a lot of ways,
yeah.
You know, particularly when it comes to the fights themselves, because
so
you're like, yeah, so much crazy stuff can happen. We've seen so many things. How many fights have you sat cage side for where, like, you know, the entire range of everything that's going to happen for Anderson Silva snapping his leg in half to, you know, these crazy upsets.
Just when you think you haven't seen, like, there's nothing new to see, something new happens.
Yeah, you see Raymond Daniels doing, like, a 360 one-punch KO thing.
Crazy.
Like, it's nuts. So, yeah, I think that rings true. Like, the sport is so unpredictable, and the more you learn about it, the less you know, I think.
No question. All right, well, here – that's a perfect segue, because there's a guy that it seems the more you learn about him, the less you know, and that is Dylan Danis. An interesting character, man. I don't think we need to set up very much, you know, what this guy is about. He's a polarizing character, to say the least, man. He's definitely confident in what he does, and you had a chance to speak with him. But I thought Dylan did a great job in this interview as well. Like, I don't think he gave you shtick, man. I feel like he gave you some actual good stuff. So let's hear a little bit. And I promise, don't turn it off. Don't hate the guy. Let's hear Dylan Danis.
Dylan, welcome back to MMA. It's been a, you know, long break for you after the first fight. How are you different coming into fight number two than fight number one?
I don't think I'm different. I mean, I only had 40 or 60 seconds in there. I don't know how long the fight was. So it's the same feelings, really. I mean, I'm just kind of learning on the go with all this. But I've been in big matches and big, you know, super fights my whole life, so I kind of know the feelings. But, I mean, like, let's be honest, like, this is only my second fight. Most of these guys have 16, 17 fights, so just getting used to it and just going on the fly, you know, kind of rolling with the punches.
Yeah, but I'd imagine you'd say you're better everywhere, right, after all this time off and continuing to train?
Yeah, man. I mean, always. I'm always training. I'm always training hard, so it doesn't really matter. Like, there is no opponent, you know. It's all about me in there.
Yeah, and, I mean, can you take us back to the first fight a little bit? Like, obviously, it was a really fast fight, but was there anything that maybe going into this fight that won't be there, less nerves, you know, those kind of things?
It wasn't too much of the – I mean, yeah, obviously, there was nerves, like adrenaline dumps, you know, like people say the UFC jitters. That was way bigger than UFC jitters for most of the guys that have it. You know, that was 1-0 going into a main card with – I mean, sorry, 0-0 going into a main card with probably – all the MMA community watching, all the MMA fighters watching, every guy tweeted after that, every, you know, so that was way bigger than UFC jitters, and I went in there and, you know, dominated. So yeah, I feel like I'm going to take that experience with me for the rest of my career, and, like, it just keeps building up until one day I'm going to have to fight for that belt, and I'm going to be like, I'm fucking seeing everything, you know?
Yeah, what's it like? You know, you mentioned the belt. You got, I assume you're going to be a welterweight. I know this is a catchweight fight, but you see the champion right here, you know, all these guys. What's the emotions when you know, are in proximity to that title you want right there?
I just see food, like, you know what I mean? I see, like, what I want. I see, I don't know, man. It's weird for me, like, I believe I could, like, I knew I could beat these guys, like, 5 years ago. Like, I've been training with guys, I don't know, man. I just know what I'm destined for. And that's the thing, when people are like, oh, can you deal with this hate and this? And I'm like, man, I know what I'm going to do. I know this and that. So, like, fuck what everybody thinks, really, you know? Man, I'm a different level than everybody, I feel like. I feel like there's no one that can even compare to me and, like, my mind in the game. So everything will show.
Yeah, so how do you take things going forward? Because obviously, you know, there's three different sides of this. You know, there's Bellator, what they want to do with you. I'm sure your management sees things a certain way and you see things a certain way. How do you strike a balance of what makes sense for your career path?
I always feel like, because I've seen people's careers, I've seen guys that start off and they go too fast, this, that, you know. So I feel like there's always listening to the people that you care about and the people that have been with you since day one and people that have been with you through the hard times. And, you know, just listening. I feel like the people that care about you will give you the best advice, you know. And, like, obviously I weigh up what I want to do, weigh up what my coach wants to do and all that. And we just go from there, you know. I feel like having a good team around you is very important, because you're seeing guys without good teams and, you know, you see one, two fights are gone, or, you know, you don't hear about them anymore, you know. Like, even with Pico, like, I feel like, with Pico, like, I think this is a tough fight to come back from a knockout. How old is he, 20?
23 now?
23 and getting knocked out and dropped in his first fight. It's not good for your brain. You know, he has, what, 10, 15 years of fighting ahead of him. You know, you shouldn't be getting caught and put to sleep like that and then keep fighting. I mean, that's not, he's not me. I don't know him. I don't, you know, I have nothing against him. I'm just saying, like, you know, you got to be smart with MMA. MMA is not wrestling. MMA is not jiu-jitsu. It's a different animal. So, you know, you got to take care of your body. You got to be smart and you got to be tuned into everything, you know.
Yeah, and you know, your next move, Max Humphrey, 3-2 guy. Just what's the scouting report on him? How is he gonna, you know, be part of this path and help you build? What's, you know, what does he challenge you with in any way?
I think he challenges me with experience. You know, he has almost 16 fights between amateur and pro, like all together. So like, experience. I think everybody I fight has more experience than me. I mean, everybody likes to talk like I'm fucking 15-0 or 30-0 because, you know, my popularity and stuff. But I'm only 1-0, you know. So I think maybe experience is the only thing he really has. But, you know, experience is not going to be enough, you know.
Well, I think you could argue you show the confidence of a fighter who's 15-0.
Exactly. So that's it. So maybe I do it to myself then.
is the goal to, you know, be more active this year? Obviously, you know, the break wasn't 100% your call. You wanted to get back in there sooner, but
yeah, 7 months for, you know, getting jumped, but whatever. I mean, whatever. Yeah, of course, I want to keep fighting, doing jiu-jitsu, everything. I'm staying active. I'm young, you know. I'm 100%, and I just want to just keep going. I mean, take everybody out. Why not? You know, it's hard though with Bellator because most of the fighters don't really have the recognition or that I have. It's like I had to build them up and stuff, and it's just like, it's a lot of work, you know. Like I fight guys that, like, even if it was this guy or anybody else, like, you know, who's in Bellator that even comes close to the kind of popularity I have, you know. Everything I say is headlines in MMA and stuff like that. So I just want these guys to kind of keep working and building up, and I'll kind of do my own thing, and then they'll come back and like maybe I'll see like, oh, maybe I'll fight this guy or not, and we'll see, you know.
Yeah, do you feel like you're the cornerstone of this card despite there being two title fights and Chael and Machida on there?
I'm the fight before the co-main event. You got Aaron Pico on the undercard. You got all these guys before me. The title fight is under me, so I mean it's that way for a reason. I mean, it was called spade to spade, so like I don't know.
Hey, well, credit to you, there was two other champions and Chael Sonnen on this platform next to you, and you're the last one up here doing interviews still.
Yeah, exactly. A little formerly late, you know. I had to get the alpha right. That's what it was. It was taking a little bit. So yeah, I mean, I think you know what I like about Bellator, man. I don't know. They, in a sense, they kind of know what they have with me, you know, and I appreciate that. So it's a good relationship with them.
So that was Dylan Danis and the young Mike Vaughn. And I thought, you know, Mike, like I said, I thought Dylan kind of kept it real a little bit. I'll tell you something funny, by the way, the video to this. Because normally, like, when we identify, we have what's called a lower third. You know, you put the name and the weight class or whatever. So we'll put, like, UFC bantamweight or, you know, Bellator light heavyweight or former UFC champion. Well, since Dylan is just fought catchweight fights, I didn't know what to really put. And I didn't want to put, like, Bellator catchweighter.
Bellator 175er.
Yeah, yeah. So I put I actually put Dylan Danis, Scott Coker's business partner.
Really? That's amazing. I didn't even notice that.
Yeah, yeah. So if you see the video version of it, there's a little Easter egg. But what did you think? I mean, give me an idea kind of what you thought walking up. Did you think we were going to get pure shtick, or did you were you surprised? Because I thought, I'll be honest, I was a little bit surprised, and I thought it was good.
No, I was too. I mean, that's the first time I've ever talked to Dylan, too.
Right.
So for me, that was like a new experience. I didn't really know what to get out of him. But, I mean, I've listened to his interviews. I think the problem with his, like, shtick when he's giving those lines is, like, his delivery just isn't that, like, emphatic. And
right.
It's not, like, you know, McGregor or Chael-esque. He just doesn't have that, like, that little bit of charisma.
Right.
It's just like, oh, you know, I'm the best. I'm going to beat all these guys. Like, you know, stuff
yeah,
like that.
I
it
agree.
Just doesn't really, like, register in the same way. But, yeah, I think he gave some real stuff there, particularly talking about, like, his career progression.
Yeah, you touched on it earlier, and I thought that was incredibly honest and insightful.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, it's kind of the theme of, you know, this whole podcast,
yeah.
You know, starting with our first guest there and just going all the way through, and, you know, we might get to Pico and stuff later, but yeah, it's really interesting just to see his place in the game and how people react to him. I mean, he's doing everything right outside the cage to, like, get himself, you know, he seems to relish the hate, so,
yeah.
Like, good for that. But, yeah, I'm curious to see his development. He's such a young guy. Like, of course, we all want to see him in there fighting, like, you know, a name, someone actually good. But right now, we're in that okay phase where these fights
sure.
are going to be good for, you know, maybe another year if he's able to stay active. Like, unfortunately, he lost basically a year of his MMA career there due to, you know, the whole 229 fiasco. But, yeah, I think get him to 3-4-5-0, and then I think you need to move him, especially if he's going to continue talking like this. Like, you can only go so far
yeah.
in doing that.
He had a great moment, and I hate to say that I missed it, man. It sucked because I was busy setting up the camera, but some people might have seen an image of him with two belts.
Oh, yeah, I tweeted that out, and he retweeted
it. Oh, did you tweet it out? Okay.
Yeah, got, like,
so you got
400 retweets or something like
phenomenal.
That.
Phenomenal. And all it was, I mean, and good kudos to him for paying attention. I don't know, did he do it? So do you saw the whole thing develop? Did he
yeah,
do it?
So
what happened was, he was up on a stage. There were four people on the stage. Yeah, it was Rory. Dylan, Darian Caldwell, Rory, and then Chael.
Yeah.
The two champs were in the middle, so they had both belts on a table so that the both fighters they have next to them. Those fighters were ushered off the stage. The interview that we had with Dylan was basically like the last interview of media day. Mm-hmm. And so we get up, and I'm moving to go reset my camera to get ready to shoot the face-offs, and then you can explain what happened
from
there.
Yeah, then I turn around, and the two belts are sitting there, and, you know, my caption was a little, you know, enthusiastic, being like, you know, Dylan snatched Rory and Darian right. Caldwell's belts. And
did you so did you prompt him to do it, or did he?
No, I just turned around. And he just did. I mean, I think I was almost trying to get him to do it during the interview when I was like, Rory was over there. I was gonna be like, oh, you know, you should grab that belt or something. But ultimately, he didn't do it. But yeah, he just picked him up and he picked the first one up. And at first, he just put that one over and he was like, oh, and he just grabbed the other one. And, you know, these. If we're pulling back the curtain a little bit, these are prop belts. Like, they're belts, but,
right.
like, this isn't – Rory McDonald didn't bring this from Montreal,
right.
Darian Caldwell. Like, they have just belts they use for media day and stuff like that just to make it easier on the fighters and all that stuff. But Horiguchi's belt was real that he brought for that
stand-up.
That was the damn Ryzen belt.
Make sure you go check out the face-offs. So you have to see the photos or the video. This Ryzen belt is it's better than he is. It's bigger than he is.
It's
crazy.
Insane. So Dylan picks them up, puts them over his shoulder, and just starts posing for photos, and it was great. People ate that up, and yeah, I tweeted it out, and he retweeted it, and that got many people upset. Ben Askren tweeted something, you know, in response, being like, you know, why don't you go earn one of those? Like, it's funny, he was carrying more belts than he has more than fights. two belts, one fight. So he's changing the game. He's got doubling up in one fight.
I love it. I thought it was great, man. That's good. I didn't know that you tweeted out. That's good that you got a picture of it, because I didn't get one. Because I was moving the video camera to the back to get ready for the face. I was just like, damn it, that's hilarious. And he had kind of like such a little wry smile while he's doing it. Like he knew he was just being naughty.
Yeah, he knows what he's doing. And you know, no one seemed to, you know, it's not like Rory or anyone else came over. You know, if Rory wins, I'd be curious to know, you know, ask him that question post fight and see what he thinks.
Yeah.
But yeah, definitely a smart move by him. He was the talk of, you know, a lot of people yesterday for doing that. And that's ultimately all you can ask for and all you can try for.
That's it. Listen, a couple fights that I think are, I don't want to say being overlooked. I mean, it's hard to give equal love to six fights on a main card. But Ricky Banderas versus Patrick Mix looks like it should be good. And Juan Archuleta versus Eduardo Dantas looks like it should be a really good fight as well. You know, these don't have championship implications, although Juan Archuleta did say that he's been promised a title shot at 135.
Coker didn't necessarily seem to agree with that one. But
Juan Archuleta told you that he got a new contract, and it's written into his contract that he gets a title shot with a win here.
Yeah.
And then we asked Coker.
To review the language of that one.
He certainly doesn't remember that clause.
Which, I mean, it makes sense. Usually you don't have that stuff written to a contract, but that's a big fight for Juan. I mean, this guy's been killing it for a long time. You know, side note, I tweeted as well, we saw TJ Dillashaw out here. First time seeing TJ Dillashaw in like a public space in the MMA world since his USADA suspension.
He seemed to be in good spirits.
That was interesting. Yeah, he did look smaller to me. Yeah. I will say that.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, Juan's been killing it. That bantamweight situation is going to be pretty fuzzy, though, no matter who wins this fight, because, you know, not to segue too much off, but
I want to get to, because that's what I want to say. I mean, these are good fights, but I mean, it's weird card placement, but Darian Caldwell versus Kyoji Horiguchi is a phenomenal fight, and I get it. They want to open with a bang, I guess. They probably want to make sure they don't have five back-to-back five-rounders.
And it's available on DAZN in Japan.
Good
so
point there as well.
To kind of do that. That works as well.
Yeah. But I'm excited for this fight, man. I really am. And it is, I mean, I'm excited for the fight because I think it's a phenomenal matchup. You know what I mean? Like, it's just a great fight. You know, we just saw one great bantamweight fight last week. Now we're going to see another. I mean, it's a great fight, but I'm loving the whole concept too, man. I mean, I understand why the UFC does their business the way they do, and I don't blame them one bit for like, hey, we're not going to cross promote. I get it. Totally understand it, totally respect it, totally support it. But these other organizations, you know, that can't build a roster the size of the UFC's, I love the fact that they're coming together because now we get treated to fights like this, and I love this fight as the matchup of the fighters, but to me, just the fact that we have these two organizations working together is awesome.
Yeah, it's great. And just to address the UFC thing really quickly, I mean, I think I could envision at some point a scenario where they do something with another organization, but I think Dana even said it like as recently as this past week. I don't know if it was pre-fight or post-fight during like his media sessions, but someone addressed this in some sort of context, and he basically said, he's like,
there's just no one outside the UFC that, like, captivates me. He's like, I think it was talking about Ben Askren in some sense.
Yeah,
he's
yeah.
like, if there's a guy out there that I want, like, I'll get him.
Right.
And we'll make something happen. Like,
yep.
whether it's a trade or, they couldn't even co-promote with Fedor, but that was a whole ridiculous other thing. But, like, if there's a guy out there that the fans are like, this fight absolutely has to – every single Dana White press conference, they're like, you know, we want to see this fight, blah, blah, blah.
Yep.
Like, I think they would make it happen. You know, Dana, for better or worse, he always says, I would make the fights that the fans want to see.
Sure.
More often than not throughout history, I think he's delivered on that. So, yeah, I think it's just – the scenario of getting it right and having a person that just works for them. And right now, that doesn't work for them. But
yeah.
for these two organizations, it makes all the sense in the world, and I love it.
And I think Coker said the other day, too, you know, Scott Coker talked to us, then Saki Kibara talked to us as well. But I think, you know, they both kind of mentioned, like, the big thing is you got to trust that other person. You know what I mean? Because normally – It's a two-way trade. It's not just one event. I mean, if somebody gets the benefit of your fighters, you need to get the benefit of theirs later on. So it's got to be a two-way trade. And, of course, we saw that not happen back in the day with Pride and the UFC.
Yeah,
so.
Manuel Silva coming over. I want to fuck Chuck.
It's so ridiculous. I remember watching that live, and I was like, oh, why did he say that? Why did he say that? But I mean, they had the trust. And I love this fight. And I am really intrigued. And I tell you, it's fun because, you know, I've started doing commentary in Vegas for FFC, Final Fight Championship, and they use a ring. And it's just been so long since I've watched MMA in a ring, like, that up close and in person.
It's way nicer to watch, though.
The sight lines are great. It's phenomenal. Yeah. But you realize how much it changes, especially the wrestling portions of a fight. You know what I mean? Not being able to wall walk, not being able to trap a guy, against the cage because he's got some give.
Having
he's got
people
some move.
Grabbing at your legs and pushing you back
into
the ring and stuff. It's insane.
It changes it. So, and that's why I'm really intrigued by this because – I mean, I think Horiguchi is phenomenal, man. Of course, he won the first fight in Japan to claim that belt that's bigger than he is. But the first fight, there were some scenarios that played out up against that cage or up against the ring that I think would have been different if they were in this cage.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not totally – like, I kind of asked, you know, some of the key players involved in that, you know, the difference between the ring and the cage, but – I think Horiguchi is extremely comfortable in a cage. I mean, obviously, he had his UFC run there. He said it himself. Like, I've been to ATT. I was there a few months ago. They don't have a ring.
Yeah, they have
a ring. They have pretty much a normal size.
And even if you're not in a cage, like, you're up against, like, a padded wall, which is essentially a cage.
Yeah, exactly. So he's really used to that environment. It's very comfortable. The octagon is definitely, like, they have an octagon ATT. The circular cage, never, you know, that maybe would be an interesting story to do at some point, the octagon versus the actual circular cage, like
right.
how they differ in terms of trying to cut angles and stuff. But, yeah, I don't think, like, at the end of this fight, whoever wins, we're going to be like, oh, well, like, you know, the cage was the difference maker. Or
sure.
Gucci didn't know what he was doing. Like, I think that's not going to play into it too much. But, yeah, Horiguchi is absolutely amazing. Like, he is so talented that – I don't think that stuff really factors in.
These,
like,
two guys are freak athletes, man, both of them. Freak athletes, man. Both their workouts were fun. Both of them had a good time, and just their speed to me, honestly, I think this is the best fight on the card.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of, I think, just overall, like, importance, and because right now that bantamweight division is crazy. Like, that number one spot is up for grabs in a lot of ways. Like, obviously Henry Cejudo made his statement, but he's beat one guy in the division. Like,
yeah.
One, I mean, TJ too, say what you will about
right.
that whole thing. But, like, yeah, I think Horiguchi's put together a nice resume. Caldwell's put together. Like, you could come out here and say this guy is the number one bantamweight in the world, the winner of this fight, and I don't think there's, like, a super strong argument against it. So that's great. That's amazing for Ryzen. That's amazing for Bellator.
Yep.
That's what Scott Coker wants. They want to be able to say these are, you know, we have the best fighter in the world in that weight class, and it's growing. You know, you could make that argument about Musasi. I don't think necessarily Bader's there yet, but now you can make it about Ali Malay. You can keep going. So there's some interesting stuff happening with Bellator right now, and I'm curious to see how this whole thing shakes out, because it's just, I don't know, the fallout of this is, I'm almost just as interested in the fight, because it's just madness. You know, you have Horiguchi, who is supposedly promising that he's going to come over and fight once a year and defend this title. But, like, I'm sure that doesn't make the other bantamweights happy. I guarantee if that happens, we'll be seeing Bellator introduce an interim title
at some
point.
Of course. And that to me, perfect use of an interim title.
Exactly. And maybe win or like regardless of who wins, because Darren Caldwell is saying that he's going to be in this featherweight tournament that's coming up. So if he wins that thing, the bantamweight title isn't getting defended for a while. So it's just all – it's very interesting to see what happens with the winner of this fight, the division, all that kind of stuff. It's pretty compelling at the moment.
I wonder if Horiguchi would be the kind of guy that the UFC would ever want to get back. I mean, I think we were all surprised when he left, but my understanding was just that, like – you know, he basically wanted out because he knew he could go make more, way more money in Japan.
And that's, I think, going to be the big issue of ever getting him back.
That's what I wanted
to. He's the guy over there.
Yeah.
He's, how many Risen shows has he headlined?
Yeah.
He's a huge star over there. The fights for him, generally speaking, are easier, more or less, than having to fight these killers over and over.
And he's the man. He's the poster guy.
He's the guy. So, like, it's really tough to walk away from that, especially when he's already been through the UFC experience for a long time. It's not being like, there's that not that unknown, like, how would I do?
How would I do?
Guys?
I know
like,
I did good.
This guy's,
I know. I did fine.
Like, yeah, I beat everyone except for literally maybe the best fighter ever.
True. And I think he could – we were kind of talking on the way over here. I think at this point, I think Horiguchi could beat Demetrius right now. Like, it may take a little of the luster off of it now that we've seen Demetrius lose to Cejudo, even though that was a razor-thin fight. I did think it was scored the right way. I know a lot of people don't.
Horiguchi and Cejudo would be
– oh, it'd be a great fight,
that
too.
That would be an incredible, incredible fight.
It'd be a great fight. See, I just wonder, man, if they are going to stick with these lighter weight classes, which sounds like, you know, Dana said they're keeping flyweight. I wonder if – I know he's doing 135 now. I wonder if he'd go back to 125. He's a tiny dude. He's not small. He's muscular.
The size difference was ridiculous.
It's a massive size.
It's crazy.
I'm pumped up for this fight. To me, that's the quality fight right there.
Yeah, and you're getting it right off the bat. So it's going to be a fun start to that main card for sure. There's some good – and I kind of like how it's spread out. I mean, the back-to-back – title fights is pretty exhausting in a lot of ways.
I agree.
If it does go five rounds, and then you have a Chael Sonnen and Machida fight in there that could easily go all three rounds.
Yeah, the end
of that night could be a bit of a slog if they had had it, you know, proper, more or less, bout order. But I kind of, and this is the kind of shit Bellator can get away with.
Exactly.
If the UFC did this, they would be dragged over hot coals. Like, imagine if last week, you know, Valentina and Jessica Eye opened the main card.
Kicked off the main card.
Like, that'd be cool, but... It would be.
I mean, dude, if that was a Bellator card, you probably would have kicked off with Valentina, right? And then you probably
literally, no pun intended.
And then you probably would have had the other title fight as the co-main, and do Ferguson and Cowboy as the main, right? That's probably would have been the Bellator bout order.
You easily could, and that would be. I wouldn't be complaining about that. I mean,
no,
at the end of the day, like these people who freak out about bout orders and stuff, like the only thing that kind of I don't like about. You know, these stack cards, there's these fights you want to see as five rounders.
Right.
I was left with that feeling, obviously not with the Ferguson fight, but with a lot of other
fights. Well, I think had it gone another 5 minutes. I mean, I don't know. I felt like the momentum was building one way.
Yeah.
But I think we all kind of were worried going into that fight. Like, what if we have a three-round war and we're like.
But like the Aljamain fight with Munoz, the Caitlin Chukagian, all the Calderwood fight. Like, I would have liked to see all those fights five rounds. But, yeah. They do what they do, and it's nothing that I freak out too much about. Everyone's like, you know, Chukagian and Calderwood are opening the card, like, you know, blah, blah, blah. I'm just like, at the end of the day, I'm watching all the fights anyways,
exactly.
So like, it doesn't really matter to me too much.
And if you're Bellator, you got to do things different. You can't just be a UFC clone, you know
what
I mean?
You can't. You got to mix it up. You got to make it interesting, and I think they're doing a pretty nice job right now.
All
right,
speaking of card placement, let's get to the prelims real quick. I do want to ask about this one because – I have a lot of questions about this. Aaron Pico versus Adam Borich. Okay, first of all, I have a question about just the fight itself because Adam Borich
ain't no joke, man.
He's a beast, dude.
Ain't no joke.
This is not
12-0, I think.
Yes, this is not a setup comeback fight for Aaron Pico. You know what I mean? And Aaron Pico, as Dylan Danis said earlier, I mean, the career that he's had. I mean, good for him wanting to fight the best and the best and going in against these beasts from day one, but he's still such a young guy. He's had a couple of knockouts. So the matchmaking itself is a little weird to me. I mean, it's not weird to me in the fact that I think these are two very talented young guys, so it's cool. But I feel like Pico's in that kind of almost like rebuilding spot, and he's not getting a rebuilding fight. And it's on the prelims too. This has been – I mean, this was – you know, what was the ESPN article? The best prospect in the history of MMA. You know, I mean, now it's like – now you're on the prelims, and it feels like – I feel like – and maybe I'm making too much of it, man, because I know this is a young kid, and he's got all the athleticism and talent in the world, and who knows, man, he could fight another 20 years. But I feel like this is like a crossroads fight for Aaron Pico.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy. If he loses this, he's going to be 4-3 in MMA. And if I told you that before he started, or even after, you know, that first loss, and then maybe when he was 1-1 or something, like, yeah. You know, a year.
By the way, he's only
going to
be 4-3.
Yeah, he's going to be 4-3. You'd be like, who is he fighting? Like, you know, with really all title fights or something? Like, who knows? But yeah, I mean, I just don't. You never know, like, behind the scenes type of stuff. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know where his contract stands. Maybe this is the last fight on his deal, and they're being like, Adam Boric is our guy now.
Yeah,
you know, we don't think Pico's gonna come back.
That's what I think. I think
maybe
something
we're paying
like that.
Him too much money.
That's what I
and
think.
They're like, hey, you know.
I think something like that's going on. I think something like that's going on.
It definitely feels a little weird because, like, I haven't seen. And I'm, you know, we ran out of time at media day. We didn't get the chance to talk to him, unfortunately. It's
well, there
the
were 21 fighters there.
21 fighters, yeah. Like, you can't get to everyone. It's impossible. But yeah, it just seems like there's like more to it. I don't know. It's really weird.
He's changed gyms. So that's good. I mean,
he's changed gyms. He's changed. You changed management.
Changed
as
management.
Well.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of things going on. And you wonder, you know, this guy goes out there like an absolute hellraiser. Goes out there just going for the kill from. Second one, how is Jackson Wink going to alter his approach? Maybe we see.
And can you do it in one camp?
You know, maybe he'll actually go for a takedown in this fight. Wouldn't that be something? He has wrestling credentials.
I was
going to
say,
I wasn't sure.
It is funny, right? I mean, the guy was going to go to the Olympics for wrestling, and he never wrestles. And I mean, he's got some amazing fights.
Boxer too.
Sure.
Like, he got some good stuff going on, but yeah, it's weird. Like, honestly, the best thing, it might not be the most exciting thing, and it's on the prelims, so whatever, but the best thing for him might be to, like, win a grind-you-out 15-minute decision just for his development. Like, how much cage time does this guy even have at this point?
Yeah,
like,
not that much.
Like, 10 minutes or something?
Not
like,
that much.
Get this guy a little more experience. Like, I don't know. It's so weird just to see this whole thing, because we know he again, it's the theme of this podcast, I feel like, bringing these fighters along. Like, he was the one that... He didn't want to take the MVP route, the Neiman Gracie route, like any of these people. He's like, fight one, give me someone legit, and they did, and he lost. And then fight two, it was like a little more down, but it was a guy with a winning record and stuff like that. And then he took the big jump up again. He lost, and it's just a, I guess, a learning. I don't even know if it's a learning lesson because I don't know if it's done right or wrong. If he had won these fights, this guy would be on the top of the world. He might be fighting. If he had won that last one, for all we know, you know, he'll be fighting the champion sometime soon.
That's crazy.
But I think for him, this one is probably, assuming, you know, he still has a future with Bellator.
Yeah.
He needs to win this if he wants to on that tournament.
I agree, man. I think this is
a featherweight tournament because that's
big,
you know, that's what all these fights are about at this point at featherweight.
Yep. It's a big moment, man. It really is. I do feel like it's crazy to say that about a kid so young.
Would you think he wins or?
I don't know, dude. I like Adam Boric a lot, man. I think he's got talent, and he's got size.
Yep.
I think Aaron Pico might lose.
He's got some nasty power on him, too. Yeah, I can't remember what fight. He got a nice flying knee knockout, I think, in one of his Bellator fights. So, like, he ain't no joke.
No.
And, I think for Pico, man, just wrestle this dude. I just want to see it. And maybe, like, I just want to see you try
please
to take
go for
down.
A takedown.
Maybe pass his
like guard. Like George Gershell back in the day, where you're like, please use your jiu-jitsu.
Just, like, do something.
Please,
you know?
Use
and
your jiu-jitsu.
At least George Gershell could, like, be like, oh, well, I got the fight of the night bonus anyways. They ain't getting that shit in Bellator. So, like, what's the point?
Should say, by the way, that we don't know exactly where that fight is taking place in the prelims, because I will say this about Bellator. There's a lot of things about what they do that
keep
I love.
Oh,
my God. They change the bout order every single – like. Every press release that comes out, it's in a different order. Yeah, exactly. Everything that comes out, like the bouts move around, so you never even know what's happening. Heather Hardy's back to action. Boy, what a, you know, talking about interesting conversations. What a kind of revelation that she had with you, saying that, you know, she got death threats after her last fight. I mean, listen, I think we all are aware at this point that people are ridiculous online, and you expect them to be inappropriate with women because that's just the kind of dogs that are out there, but not inappropriate like that.
Right.
The hell?
I know. It's, you know, and I'm sure all the people who subscribe and listen to this wonderful podcast are just the cream of the crop when it comes
top
to MMA
fans. Roadshow fans would never do
that. The best, but, you know, this is – the fans in the sport can be very dark at times, and they do not treat people with the respect they deserve. And, you know, I posted the clip of that on the MMA Junkie Instagram. And, you know, I commented on it from my personal account, just being like, I hope none of you folks out in Junkie Nation were the ones who treated you this way, because it's just a fight.
Sure,
like,
that
you
went
know,
over well.
Sometimes it sucks. It got, like, a few hundred likes, but there's some people being like, show me these death threats. Like, I bet she's making it up. And I'm like, okay,
oh,
like, you can't, there's nothing you can – you can't win in the sport no matter what you do.
Yeah.
And
the Anderson Silva and win 16 fights in a row and be like the greatest thing ever. But
I don't understand people that feel the need to reach out and comment to these people. You know what I mean? Like, and this is what, and boy, you know, we saw that clip last week with Jessica Eye, right? And the thrill and the agony where she's breaking down in tears, you know what I mean? And she's apologizing, you know, and man, I do think that's so – I mean, that's what we see on a weekly basis. You know what I mean? And when we say the highest of highs, the lowest of lows, I mean, this sport is the lowest of lows. You get knocked out in front of everybody. You feel like a failure. You know what I mean? It's awful. And then for somebody to pounce on it on top of that, let's say they weren't death threats. Let's say they were just insults. Now, I'm not saying that they weren't. She wouldn't make that up. But even if it wasn't death threats, even if it was just talking trash, like, why do people feel the need to reach out – and kick somebody when they're down.
Yeah, and it sucks now, too, because it's changed her mentality about her approach to the sport. Like, you know, this is a game where you will get, you know, chewed up and spit out just as quickly as you were pushed up to the top. And someone like Heather Hardy, like, yeah, she's, what, like 36 or 37. Yeah. She's not going to beat Alima Way and be the champion or anything like that. But, like, you know, she's a martial artist. She's competed in combat sports forever. Like, oh, my God, how dare she go out there and, like, try to take someone down and, like, try to, you know, fight the sport she's competing in. Like, oh, my God. And I know in that Ann Jewelton fight, like,
she was funny. She
two
said
boxers,
she,
we expect them
she
to
said she,
go out there and
she,
take
she said she, had, she said she had fun. She said it was my bad jiu-jitsu against her bad jiu-jitsu.
Yeah,
I thought it was kind of fun.
You know, it's just the – that's how you get better.
Yeah.
You know, that fight is – maybe it taught her the wrong lesson or the reaction to it taught her the wrong lesson, but, like, that's just – and, I mean, fans in every sport get bad.
You know?
And there's – it just – it feels like they're – and maybe that's because they don't have to, like, face it in a lot of ways, but it seems like there's way less remorse about fan reaction. Like, you know, I was at the Raptors game when Kevin Durant went down and tore his Achilles, and there was the whole big thing about the fans cheering. And, you know, my opinion on that, they turned the ball over at the same time. I think it was a little bit of this, a little bit of that.
Yeah.
There was definitely some people, like – being like, oh, my God, our chances of winning the championship. Just, I don't think anyone was like, you know, Kevin Durant's injured. Yes. Like, he sucks. I hate him. But right away, as he was leaving the court, you saw the remorse. You saw everyone start chanting, KD.
Oh, wow,
like,
that's cool.
It turned around on the flip of the dime as soon as people
Well, that
knew.
Doesn't get covered quite as often as the
no,
first fight.
Of course, the negative story is way, way sexier in that sense. But, you know, you just don't really see that in MMA. Like, there's no – people will just say what they.
It's terrible.
I tell you what.
One other revelation, not really a revelation, but it's just a way of saying it that I'd never heard before from Heather. That was dead on. And she said, you know, once one ticket is sold to a sporting event, it's no longer sports; it's now a business. And I was like, boy, that is so damn true. You know, this especially in the fight game, right? This is not just about wins and losses, man. Yeah. Obviously, it's entertainment as well. And I don't know. I'd never heard it verbalized that way, and I was like, dude, you're right about that.
I don't know if I hate necessarily. I think in MMA, I think that applies more
to
other things, but then that's the difference between, you know, I'm watching the NBA Finals preview going on right behind us,
right.
But in other sports, you win, and that's all that matters.
Yeah, but
and you can get to that.
But at the same time, I would counter that it's still a business because, I mean, like, the rules are tailored. Like, look at the way the quarterbacks are protected in the NFL or the way, like, you know, fouls are called in the NBA to keep fan interest, right? So I think it still applies. Maybe not as directly because you're right. You could be, you know, in basketball, you could have, like, five boring – you know, players that are immobile but run, like, some kind of, like, amazing zone defense. You know what I mean? Like, you don't have to be
the
run and gun.
It's not exciting,
right.
But, like, they're winning games.
But they can win titles.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's the whole, I think, the debate in MMA that's going to go on till the sport exists, the entertainment versus sport debate and what it all means.
Yeah.
And there's some people, you know, like – fighters, they're just gonna be like, win is all that matters. The, you know, Curtis Blaides or something like that,
right.
In the UFC, like,
right.
Ask them straight up, be like, oh, the fans are booing, like, let them keep booing. But next thing you know, you're Elias Theodoro, like, you know, you win all these fights, but
so
you're
true.
Not entertaining, and you could be ranked, and just like that, you're gone.
Yep.
Because we know what the sport values, and it seems, you know, more and more the UFC seems to be doing some of that stuff in terms of, like, you know, keeping the fighters around. You can lose five fights in a row in the UFC, but if they're all awesome, you'll probably still have a job.
Sure.
And if you can win three terrible decisions in a row and then you get knocked out the next fight, you can be gone.
It might be
like
gone.
That.
Crazy. All right, well, listen, there's more to this card, but, you know, you mentioned the Raptors. I don't want to keep you too much longer because I know you're itching to watch some basketball at night. The Raptors will be looking to close things out and be Canada's first major champion in, what, like 25 years or something like that. But, listen, this is a good card. Hobson Gracie's on there. You've got Kubota that came over from Japan as well, so you've got some fun action there. You know, another crossover fight. Phil Hawes, you know, the name that was always the super prospect. Another guy, you know, maybe an Aaron Pico comparison there. You know what I mean? A guy that just everybody thought this was a can't miss prospect, and then you know every time he kept making it up, he would fall short. Mm-hmm. I think he's taken like a year off and like basically just been focusing on boxing and stuff. So I'm kind of excited to see it. So this is a really really good card, and I'm excited for it. I think it's going to be good. We've got newcomer Nolan King.
Yep.
Coming in town. We're welcoming him to the Junkie staff. He'll actually be here tomorrow, so he'll be cage side with you for fight night, and I'll be in the back. So if you haven't seen the MMA Junkie editions, we got Simon Head. We got Nolan King now. Both those guys got started, and we got one more edition that I can't quite reveal yet, but
teaser.
We got one more coming. So, yeah, hated to see the people that we lost. Hate to see them go, but I'm excited with the people we brought on board. So I think you're just going to keep seeing good things from MMA Junkie. So, all right, listen, I'm going to continue drinking Frosty beverages. You're going to be watching some basketball. But I appreciate your time this evening. We'll stay tuned to MMA Junkie all weekend. We'll have a Bellator 222 coverage all loaded up for you. And then next week it gets busy. There's a Bellator that we've got coverage there. There's a UFC. We're going to have that bare knuckle fight that Cole Coffey's going to be going out to for Lobov Malinovsky.
Tell
me you're not interested in Lobov Malinovsky.
I am. I mean,
yeah, you are.
Dude, I was there for that media day in New York where they, you know, the slap happened and all that kind of stuff, and it was ridiculous. And yeah, this.
And you're gonna watch.
Of course, I'm gonna watch. I mean, it's gonna be something else. And yeah, that's gonna be a busy night.
It is gonna be something else. All right. So anyway, stay tuned for Bellator 222. Everybody else, thanks for listening.